This is an interview with Thelma Crawley. It's taking place in the War Memorial in Hyde Park, in the rooms below the War Memorial. My name's Margot Beasley. The date is the 1st of March 2007, and the project is the Meals on Wheels Oral History Project, which is being conducted through the City of Sydney History Program. So, Thelma, could you just introduce yourself and tell us where and when you were born?
I'm Thelma Crawley, OAM, and I was born in Goulburn on the 23rd of July, 1927.
Thank you. Now, I'm here to talk to you today because you've got a very long history with Meals on Wheels, apart from a very full life doing many other things. And I understand you were actually present for the first Meals on Wheels meeting in the Sydney Town Hall, is that correct?
Correct, I was present, yes, at the Sydney Town Hall for the first meeting for Meals on Wheels.
How did that come to be?
Well, apparently they advertised on the radio, also in the papers, as far as I could understand. And apparently they also put letters out to different departmental stores, and that's how I got connected with that.
And you were working in the city at that
time,
weren't
you? Yes, I was working in the city at that time.
What were you doing?
I was a dressmaker designer, learning my trade.
And where were you learning it?
At Myers, yeah.
And Myers then is not the Myers that we know in Sydney now,
no,
in 2007.
No, different altogether.
I think it was then that was the department store in Melbourne.
That's right.
And what were you doing up here working for Myers?
Because I lived in New South Wales.
But you were they actually manufacturing up here?
We were making frocks. Actually, when I first went to there to work, we were doing war work. We were making parachutes, American nurses' uniforms, and we're doing something else. I just can't. Oh, we were making like a shirt jacket type of thing for the Australian Army. They were.
Mm. Mm. But by the time Meals on Wheels got going, you were into post-war production.
That's right.
Clothing for women.
Yeah, learning my trade for, well, I'd been nearly through it. I'd be through it by then.
Mm.
And had my certificates and everything like that.
So you went off to the meeting at the town hall with other people from Myers?
Yes, there was two of us went. Mm. Yeah, two of us were sent to go, and there was a lady. As I told you that I didn't know it was Melbourne or Adelaide, she was spoke to us, and she was the woman who started Meals on Wheels. Apparently she started in England, as far as that's what she told us, with a bike with a box on the front.
I think it was during the Blitz, was it, in London?
Yes, during the Blitz in London. And apparently her and her husband migrated to Melbourne. I have an idea. And she seen the poor people in Melbourne, and she decided to do the same thing as what she'd done in the Blitz in London.
So Sydney wasn't the first city then to have Meals on Wheels in Australia, but I think the City of Sydney Council was the first council to have it in Sydney.
I think we were the first in New South Wales.
And so when you went off to this meeting, you went with somebody else from your work, a colleague from your work, but you said you were actually sent by the company. So it was really the company wanting to be involved in the Meals on Wheels.
That's right, yeah.
Your friend and you didn't just see an ad or just decided to go?
No, we were just told to go to this meeting and bring back the information, all the information we could pick up. That was it.
And what can you remember about the woman who spoke to you?
Well, not very much, tell you the truth. Mm. But she was a very nice person, as though she had a kind heart and things. And she just explained everything. Maybe when she started to speak, you more likely thought, well, what's this going to be for New South Wales or for Sydney? But as she got into it, it got more interesting. And we had a lot to take back, a lot of information to take back, to come back to another meeting later on.
So you took all this printed information back to work?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was, I suppose, that was allowed to allow your managers to see what was involved.
Yes.
And whether they might make a bit of a commitment on behalf of the business.
Because we weren't the only one represent there. There was Farmers and Knock and Kirby's and McDowell's. David Jones just weren't in it, I remember that. And there was another one. I think it was McCathy's or something like that.
So they were all firms around?
They were all firms, and they were big. Oh, Snow's down at the other end. They were big firms here in big departmental stores.
Department stores primarily.
Yeah, but there was other, like, places, I suppose, they were office workers or things like that. Those were represented too, but we didn't know at the time. We were just there doing our job.
So was it quite a big meeting?
Oh, yes. Yeah. It was down in the basement of the Sydney Town Hall, and that was quite a big
space, yeah. Was it full?
No, I wouldn't say it was full.
But there must have been several hundred people.
Oh, yes, there would have been. The next meeting was bigger.
So the next meeting took place, I think, early 2007.
1957.
Beg your pardon. And that must have been then a meeting to actually get it properly established.
That is right. I can't tell you who the mayor was then, but he said they could have the town hall and they could do the cooking in the kitchen in the town, their lower town hall. Then they said they had to know what days. And it was the Methodist ladies had Mondays, the Jewish ladies had Tuesdays, Catholic women had Wednesdays, RSL had Thursdays.
These were RSL women's
auxiliaries. Yes, from all the metropolitan area. And then, you know, the other ones, like the firms, took Friday. Mm.
So the women, when you say Catholic women, Methodist women, Jewish women, presumably they would have been organised out of their churches.
That's right. They'd be like auxiliaries of the church, I suppose, yeah.
And so they would, in effect, take responsibility for one day a week.
That's right, yeah. We all took one day, like one day a week was their responsibility. Mm-hmm.
So when you first started doing it, I wonder if you can tell me just a bit about, can you remember what it was like doing the early runs? Did you go out in a car?
We went out, yes, the car was provided by work.
So it was a Myers car?
Yeah, but no, Mike, actually no, it was one of the men that worked there loaned his car.
Right.
And we used to have to go to the town hall and we picked up these big jars or vats, whatever you like, of food. We had to serve it out. And we'd pick it up the main meal, the soup, the main meal, and then there was like a little sachet of orange juice or something like that, and a sweet.
So the main meal would be in a vat of some sort. It would be a bit like a casserole or a stew.
It was mostly casseroles or stews.
And it must have been very heavy.
It was extremely heavy.
How did you manage that?
Well, the people were hungry and you couldn't see them go hungry. So you just made, you know, and you're younger, much younger than what I was, you know.
So who was driving the car?
Oh, dear.
Was it the man who owned it?
Yes, it was the man who owned it, and I'm not sure, can't remember his name.
That's fine. Now, what I was really wondering about was that although the women may have been involved in delivering and serving the food, quite a lot of women then didn't have driver's licences in the 50s.
No, it was men. There seemed to be men. Some women had, because some of them, or a couple I got to know real well, they had driven in the army. They were army girls, or had been army girls, or been, you know, long to one, some of the forces and the land army girls, they could all drive.
Mm.
But just that's who you met, you know. Was
so if you went out in a car to deliver the food, you would there was possibly a man driving, but you would be with somebody else from Myers, or might you be just happy
somebody
to be
else that might have been there.
There from could any have other been firm.
Some firms sent two girls, some sent, you know, so they we had what we call a coordinator, mm-hmm. and she'd say, "All right, this you go out with this car and you go out with that car." If they had any over. But sometimes we used to take, in my case, we had two, like myself and somebody else, and that. But our run, our first run was up around King's Cross. We started just behind St Mary's Cathedral, and we went up as far as nearly Edgecliff and out to about where Victoria Barracks would be, then down Elizabeth Bay on around the part there. That was the run. We had first run, I think we had 28 on it.
That's quite a lot of deliveries, isn't it?
But we see we didn't have the number of cars, we didn't have the number of people. We need actually later on, though, when we got going, we and they must have been able to get more people to come in so they could cut some of the runs in half. So, you know,
Reduce the load. But that must mean then that the run took quite a long time if you had 28 calls to
well,
make.
Well, it did.
Several hours.
But the thing is that we were never supposed to go anywhere only in twos. Well, I can understand that. But we were naughty.
In what way?
Well, what we'd do would be if there was somebody there in that house or next door and one there, and we knew they were all right. Mm. Well, I'd run in there and my help would run in the other one, you know. And so therefore cut the time down. Mm.
So you'd have the big vat of food.
Yeah.
That would be in the boot of the car or on the
That's
back
right.
seat.
Yeah.
And then that would...
Mostly in the boot of the car. Ooh, sorry, I play with them all the time.
Mostly in the boot of the car?
Yeah, mm. mostly in the boot of the car. The sweets used to be in like a foam
box
sort of a thing, and they sometimes wouldn't fit in, so they went on the seat of the car. But you'd just, you know, pick up one and then someone would take the sweets. Yeah.
But you'd take the vat actually into the house and serve the food there into their plates.
Yes.
So it would start very heavy but get lighter
lighter and lighter as you got. You're always pleased to see the last one. Not that you didn't want to see the poor people, but just that it was, you know, you were getting tired then.
So this was in effect Myers' contribution to the community,
yes.
because presumably you were still paid work time.
Oh yes, we were paid. But see, in those days, we finished work at 3 on a Friday. So therefore, it was only a matter of 2 hours or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What can you remember about the people that you visited on that first run? Can you remember much about them?
Yes, the first run was a surprise because I'd been a country girl coming to the city to live. I didn't realise, you know, what people lived or how people lived and that. And, of course, when I told my mother and father I was going to do this and I was going up, doing the run up around the cross, you know, they weren't very happy because when I came to Sydney, I was very young, I was only 14 and a half, and I lived with my grandmother, and they were places, you don't go there, and you know, imagine mum and dad's worry, but they got used to me going around. I said, oh, well, it was two people, and we were okay, you know, but it was such a surprise, because one of the people was, I'm trying to think of her name, she used to walk up the tram lines in St. Bede Miles.
Oh, you visited B. Miles.
We didn't visit her, but she'd be around. And she'd be up around there with this board on, you know, penny to read these things and that. And she'd ask if we have any soup over or if we have any food over, you know. And
did you ever have any over that you give to her?
No. It sort of, in some cases, where they were very sick or an old man, you know, can't look after himself, you had a little bit over, you gave him a little bit extra.
Mm.
And that, because the men were not like the women. Like, you go into a woman and she'd give you a pot to put the soup in, and that was her tea at night. She'd have the hot meal in the middle of the day and eat the soup, warm the soup up. But the men didn't seem to go into it like that.
So they weren't as organised?
No, no. And they weren't... Well, some of the money lived in such a tiny room. It only took a bed and a wash basin or a little thing at the top of the room. And that...
So when you say it was a real eye-opener for you as a young woman in Sydney, is that what you mean?
Yes,
it was. The poor conditions that people lived in?
The poor conditions that people lived in. And then you'd go into a place which was lovely. Mm. But most of all, it was... I think it was made for people who couldn't cook for themselves or anything like that, because some of them went down like upstairs underneath the buildings.
So they were like in the basement?
In the buildings, yeah. Mm. And we had one chap, he only had a very small room and a bed, and we used to go in, had to put the meals on the table. On this little bench at the top of his bed, and he had cockroaches. And they were all over they were everywhere. They were in the bed, we used to fold our dresses around us because we had dresses with big skirts.
That was a big new look.
Yeah. And they were big enough to put a bridle and saddle on and put them in the Melbourne Cup we were at one stage. But that was us girls talking, you know. The poor devil, he could never have cooked. He had nothing to cook with or anything like that.
So there was a really clear social need for Meals on Wheels.
It was really... I think it's the best thing the council ever done, starting it. And I was pleased to see it go right out then throughout New South Wales. Mm. And that. But no, there was a lot of sadness.
What are you thinking about when you say that? That there was a lot of sadness.
Well, you'd go in, not one woman now, I can't think of her name, but she was one of our first coordinators down at the town hall. And I hadn't seen her for years. I changed over from work doing Meals on Wheels to RSL to do it for them on the Thursday. I'd finished work. And I walked in this day and here she is. I hadn't seen her, it might have been about 9 years.
Walked in to do a delivery of a meal.
To do this meal and this woman's there. Mm. She knew me, but I had to think. And all of a sudden, what she said to me when I walked in, "Oh, Thelma," she said, "I never thought I'd have to have Meals on Wheels." And I thought, oh, you know, what a beautiful woman, and yet you deserve everything you get. You've worked very hard. But then later on, about 12 months or 18 months later, we went in. We had a key to go into her door. Some of them we had keys. And we found her. She had passed away sitting in a rocking chair on a little veranda. So it was really sad.
Was she the one you told me about before who always had the table set?
Yes.
Can you tell me a bit about that?
That she always had a lovely lace tablecloth, or linen and lace tablecloth, all set out with a lovely knife and fork, little china plates, and her dinner plate was a china plate, beautiful. And they always had a little table set, you know, like if she was going to entertain the Queen or somebody. But it was lovely. Mm. Now, some of them went to a lot of trouble.
Mm. It means, I suppose, that people, even though they may be sick or ailing in some way and are unable to cook for themselves or are in very reduced circumstances, but they still take a pride in the daily ritual and appearance of things.
That's right. And I felt some of them just put their good dress on because they were... Because the majority of the people you met were... That's the only time they had someone to speak to or have a yarn to, you know, and they'd try to hold you. They'd start up a yarn where you had to keep going to keep the food warm. Mm. And that... But many a time I felt like, you know, I could have sat down, lost time. Mm. But that's me. I can't help it.
Well, I guess that might be a fairly common experience because often the people who do this kind of work are caring and want to take an interest in people who have particular needs. But in fact, the requirements of the Meals on Wheels is always that the people get around very quickly, isn't it?
That's right. Mm. Yeah. Some of them were on for 2 or 3 years. Some of them, mostly men. The women, they used to say, oh, we've got tired of it, you know. Got tired of the meals because they were the... They knew what they were getting on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. When we went to the foil plates, so they could give them a variety.
It was easier to make it.
They just, yeah. And then they'd say, oh, I got tired of that. We know what we're having on.
You know. Well, what would they do if they got tired of Meals on Wheels?
They'd go off it, so I don't know what they did, or they had somebody to shop for them, or they went doing the shopping, you know, themselves.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because it implies that the Meals on Wheels were not always strictly necessary, that there was a bit of choice involved.
Yeah, well, see, you had to have a doctor's certificate. Always, that was... Always you had to have a doctor's certificate. The doctor had to think that you needed it. And that, and the last was that I used to have a doctor's certificate every 6 months. So I don't know if that still stands, because I haven't done it for 3 years because I've got a bad heart. But I still love to do it. But you fall in love with them. We had a dear little woman. She reckoned she was a very good ballerina, and she's supposed to have danced the leading lady in France, and that I believed her because she had photographs, and we got very attached to her. So when they put her in nursing home, we visited her.
Oh, did you? Just on our own time.
Go out, and then she had nobody. And she spoke beautiful French. She used to go into French voice. Tell us how nice we were and that. But she, you know, oh, we had some beautiful women and men, and we had some that, you know.
Some who were more difficult.
More difficult.
Tell me some of those stories. You've mentioned them to me. You don't need to name anybody. But you have mentioned to me on another occasion that some of them were pretty difficult to deal with.
Oh, yes. We had a chap down in, he was in Maclay Street, and he was down under, oh, yes, Maclay Street he was. Down underground, we used to go down a few stairs. And, he'd say, open that meal. And we'd open the meal for him. Don't want that. And he'd throw it. I've worn a couple of times meals down the front of my dress, you know. I wasn't the only one. I let it go. Some of the girls put a complaint in. We're supposed to take back anything that we think that should be been done. But it didn't matter what you gave him. I don't think he'd be happy with. And another time, another man, the council used to give them at Christmas and Easter a gift with food in it to take them out, because they'd only got meals 5 days a week.
And so the Easter and Christmas hampers, as they were called, would tide them over the holiday
period.
That's
right. We'd go out to the, we were at Raper Centre then, and we'd go out there and pack them about 6:30 in the morning, do that delivery, and then come back and pick the meals up and go out again.
So all of that was additional?
That's all
volunteer
additional
work on top of the meals.
And he, this one fellow, he said, don't go. And he opened it then, and there was eggs in it, and he threw the eggs across the room. You know I can't have this. You know I don't. Wouldn't cook that. And, you know, and I thought, how ungrateful. You don't have to pay for it, you know. But others would be so grateful, you know. They couldn't thank you enough, and you'd have to say, well, please write to the council. Or in some cases, we wrote to the council.
Because the people did actually pay for the meals, didn't they?
Yes,
but not the hampers.
No, the hampers was free. The hampers were a gift from the council.
So how much, it must have been a very big production in the kitchens in the lower town hall.
Yeah, well, the girls that came back on off the runs used to peel the vegetables for the next day.
Oh, really?
I had to go back. But the girls...
Because you had to go back to work.
Yes.
But the ones who didn't have to go back to work, they also did a lot of the food preparation.
Yes, they went in. When they came back, they went down and they peeled the potatoes and all the veggies that were to go out the next day. So when the women came in the morning, they were all ready to start to be cooked.
Yeah. That's an enormous amount of labour, isn't it?
Yeah.
It probably also depended very much on there being a lot of women who weren't in the workforce.
Yeah, well, it would be, yes. Yeah, because in those days, when some of the men come back from the war, I think the women worked so long and then they, you know, finished work. But I think the volunteers they got was absolutely marvellous. I often wondered and would have loved to know the amount of women they did get, you know, and men, because the men were there too. Some of the men that retired from work were driving, but they'd only drive in certain areas because they didn't like the city and there wasn't that many cars in those days. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was marvellous. And that, I'm not the only one. You've talked to the girls and we get together, we talk about our days and our funny things that happened on Meals on Wheels.
You mentioned to me before also that you, more than once, you found people, dead bodies.
Yes. Mm. They'd gone to sleep and not woke up. And then there was one lady we used to go, an elderly lady, and she had this moth-eaten carpet or mat in front of a beautiful fireplace. And as you walked in the front door, it was there. And we weren't allowed to walk across it. We had to go all the way around it. And if we walked across it, she get real upset and yell. But one day we walked in and we could smell gas. And she was laying on the, well, not actually laying, sitting sort of slumped in the lounge, because both of us ran to turn the gas off because it was choking us. And we ran across the mat, but she was gone. She'd not deliberately gassed herself. She'd put the porridge on and it just spilled all over and put the fire out. And of course the gas was leaking into the thing and it got her. And we talked about her quite a lot. We used to say, I bet she was going mad, like at us running across that good mat. And it was as bare could be. But she was a beautiful old lady.
Yeah, and probably trying to extend its life as long as she possibly could.
That's right. Mm. Maybe it'd been a gift to her from a husband or a gift from somebody very close. And that's because you'll find those things too.
Yeah, something precious.
Yeah.
And were you ever in any danger?
Oh, no, not really that you realised you were. We went into one place in King's Cross Road, I think it was, and there was an elderly gentleman in a place. He was a Jewish gentleman, and we used to serve him meals. But this day we walked in, there was three people and they had masks on. Now, not masks, like it was like a face of a monkey or
like a Carthy
Marx, that's what I'm trying to say. Mm. And we took no notice, you know. They got him his knife and fork, we thought, you know, everything was all right, and came out. But we didn't realise till we read in the paper that they were there holding him up. He was a diamond merchant, or he had diamonds in the place. But we were in there, and we were laughing and going on. He was a man that never smiled or anything, so he didn't take any notice. But I'd say we could have been in a little bit of danger, but no, nothing really.
They probably just wanted you to come in and get out with no interruptions.
That's what I'd say too.
Mm, not draw any attention to it.
Yeah. Mm. We had a fella pull a knife on us down in Onslow Avenue, two fellas. They didn't do anything, but they wanted the food. So we just gave them one of those foil food
dinners
and went back up to King's Cross and got another one. But we didn't get hurt. It wasn't enough to... But I suppose if we hadn't given it to them, we wouldn't have known what they...
So these were just people in the street?
Just people in the street. Yeah, we used to find it hard later on, parking.
Yes, parking.
Parking was one of our biggest bugbears, you might say. And we were told we could park. And most of the police up around there and up to Edgecliftonand the they'd just look at us and keep going. Because we had a big sign. We had a big sign back in front, Wells on Wells. But we struck when the women came on. They were loved. They liked to do some...
The women parking police?
Yeah.
They were a bit meaner than the men.
Oh, my word. Yeah. And as we came back, and we told them we'd had this problem, and the council paid our fines. They said that was the only way they could do it.
Mm. You know? So there was no turning a blind eye. Strictly by the letter of the law.
That's right. And we used to park in Wood Avenue, and the only part you could get a place was near the police station, where the cars had to come in and out. And we just parked there and just have seen the police. Can we leave it here? Yeah, okay, we'll keep an eye on it, you know. No problem. No problem at all. We never had there. But we did have for parking and things. Sometimes we had to walk a long way carrying things. We could get parking space and that.
So when the changeover came to foil plates, presumably the meals were still delivered hot.
Oh, yes, yeah.
But they had, a foil plate and then foil over the top?
They had a foil plate with a foil lid, yes. Mm. And they were all kept in an ovens, so just when we were ready to go, we all had numbers, naturally, they'd pack that particular...
You all had numbers?
Well, we had... Each run had a number. And so... your boxes had your number on the top, and you went to the counter out at Rapid Centre, it'd say number 11, and they'd pack it straight out of the oven in, and you went, so the stuff was delivered pretty hot.
Mm. Yeah, so way, when you were running up and down the stairs around King's Cross, you could just take one or two meals at a time.
We had a basket we could take two or three at a time, and then in the end they were putting the soup into cups, into drinking cups, drinking cups with the little handles,
disposable,
mm-hmm. And that was easier too, because then we didn't have to carry the lot up,
And ladle it out,
ladle it out, mm. And that. But that was quite good.
So what kind of food would... how was it... You said that the menus changed a bit once they went over to the foil plates.
Yes.
So what kind of food would it be then if it formerly was
casserole? Well, they'd give them chicken with a white sauce on it, and a little baked potato and pumpkin, and a green. I always had two greens. They'd fish... They can have fish, and then they'd have a baked dinner, pork or beef and that. And because then we had diabetics too.
So some people needed special meals.
We had special meals, yeah.
Was there fish on Fridays, or was...
We'd have a variety. Not specially.
But they could have fish. Catholics would have fish on Friday.
On their card was all lined out, and it like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, so they could have fish on Friday.
Right, so they could, in effect, pre-order what they wanted.
That's right. Mm. So, they had... they had a variety, and as I say, it was better when we got the foil plates. Mm. Much better for us too.
Was that still operating out of the Lower Town Hall then, or
no?
It happening by then?
I don't know. The city council split, and they formed the South Sydney Council, and they took them out of Lower Town Hall and took them up to Roper Centre in South Dowling Street. And that's where the foil plates come in there.
And they were cooking there?
They cooked there.
And then served it onto the plates?
Put them on, and we took them out. But they also had a dining room, and they used to bring them in the council buses, and they could have their dinner there with plates. We used to have to set those tables before we went out.
So that was another job. Setting the table for the ones who came to the activity centre to
eat. That's right. Because upstairs, like, they could play cards or knit or sew or talk or write or read up there.
So it was a much more social way of eating.
Yeah, that's right.
Presumably those people were a bit more ambulant.
Oh, yeah. They were... A lot of them could move around, but they wouldn't have been able to walk, and it was too dangerous out there, crossing South Downing Street and that for them. But they used to come, and they used to arrive about 10:30, and they'd go upstairs, and then when the meals... As soon as we got out of the way, they served them their meals. In the early days, they used to have two seatings. That meant some of the volunteers had to stay in. And they were mostly the women that couldn't do that. You know, they couldn't have walked, they couldn't have carried.
Right, but they were still capable of serving.
Yeah.
So some of that work was done by volunteers also.
That's right.
Mm. Yeah. And so were you still on the same run when it was operating out of the Roper Centre, or were you going in another area?
Exactly.
Always
the same run. Occasionally, if we were short-handed, somebody didn't turn up, well, we'd take that other run out and do two runs at the one time. And that. But other than that, that was my run, and I think I'd have missed it if I'd have taken it. I'd have missed my ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, well, I suppose you get to know them over many years, don't you?
Yeah, that's right.
Mm. And you also, I think it was the late 60s when you transferred over from being somebody who worked on Meals on Wheels from Myers to somebody who worked on Meals on Wheels from the RSL Women's Auxiliary.
That's right. I changed over because in the course of time I met Lady Yeo, and her husband was the president of the RSL, state president, and... she talked me to join an auxiliary.
Your husband was in the armed services, wasn't
he? Yes, he was in the 2nd, 4th Battalion. And I went over, I joined City of Sydney Women's Auxiliary, and from there she taught me to go and do it. So I changed over and I went with them, and we used to do that Thursdays.
But you were still working at Myers at this time, were you?
No, I had left then and was working at home.
I see. So it was relatively easy for you to structure your time could do that work.
Yeah. Well, once I went to RSL, Myers wouldn't support me. Mm. They didn't say they wouldn't. I never put it to them because I thought, I'm working from home, I'm not working. So I went over there and... Mm. I'd done it for them right up till 3 years ago.
So when you were working from home, were you still doing work for Myers as a...
Only when they called you.
Just a bit of freelance work.
Yeah, that's right,
So then you only stopped doing the Meals on Wheels with the RSL auxiliaries. How long ago did you...
Three years.
So that means you were doing it... It must have been near enough to 40 years.
That's right.
Mm. So, but you still all the time did the same run?
Yes. Around King's Cross? All around King's Cross. Take this one off and put this one on, go up the street, you know.
You must have seen a lot of changes in the people over that time.
Seen a lot of changes in the Cross. The Savoy Hotel, which was burnt down, we had two people in there. We'd served for quite a number of years, and both got burnt on Christmas Day, and we'd been there Christmas Eve to see them and give their things.
And that they was died.
They died. They were burnt in the in the thing. But now there's a big building there. But all the different places have changed, and that we've seen different changes.
What about, were there people that you visited over a very long time that you can recall?
Not some were a long time, which would I'd say about 5 to 6 years, you know. But then they were, you know, either passed away or they were put into a convalescent home, which they had to go. They just couldn't live. Yeah. And I think the council stepped in too, because some of the places were very, very dirty. And one place we had was the old chappie, and he used to go out and pick all the garbage up for the garbage men and put them in his room. And he'd stack them all on top of one another. But he used to collect this, I suppose they were thrown out, these china, beautiful china cups that were broken. And he had quite a few of the old commodes, I think they used to put under the bed and with handles off or cracks, and he'd hang them all around the room. But you weren't allowed to walk around that. Well, I don't think you could have. You used to have to walk up over the rubbish and put it down in the kitchen on the other side.
And so it's climb over piles of rubbish.
Piles and piles of rubbish. But that was him. He was, you know, he was happy. And they, then the council, they didn't get beyond the girls going, and they'd say, we used to have a little meeting about every 3 months, so-and-so. We can't climb over that rubbish. And the council used to go out and clean his house up and that. And we had another lady in Greenough Avenue and used to have to step over everything, and the smell was shocking. But she played on us one day. We got there and knocked on the door, and she says, "Oh, I've fallen, you know." And we thought, well, she could have. Because she told us she'd been knocked over by a tram in Melbourne. Anyway, we rang the police and rang the ambulance, and they came and they knocked the door down, and she was sitting on the lounge as happy as day. She said, "See, I've got someone to talk to now." And, you know, these people are wasting their time. And I said, "Oh, sorry," but she said she'd fallen and she couldn't get up, you know.
So she was just lonely and she was manipulating just, people.
Yeah, she was, you know, really and truly lonely.
And there was one very famous person you visited.
I think. Rosalind Norton.
She was known as the...
The Witch of King's Cross. Mm. And she was in Rosalind Gardens. And we used to go down round stairs and down. And we'd knock on the door, and she'd open the door, and I think she used to paint her face with either plain flour or... because it was just white. But she'd penciled all the eyebrows and all the makeup. But as she opened the door, there was a picture on the wall. You used to have to go in, sort of turn right. A picture of the devil, and that was one of those that the fire went around the picture and was black as anything inside. And she'd say, "I'll have it on there." And she had a little round table, and she had like the plates, everything all put out. And as you put the food out or put the foil plate on the table, there was cats, and they'd come up through your arms and through your legs. The first time we were there, my helper was, she was a beautiful woman. She was dancing, and she's going, "Oh, oh."
Because of all the cats climbing.
Cats everywhere. And they were all black cats. That's what Imelda used to say, "And they've all got blue eyes." I never had time to look at their eyes and they were blue. But Imelda was taken up with his blue eyes and that. But everything was black. The walls were painted black. She wore this black, this white face. You know, it was just a...
Was she pleasant to deal with?
Lovely to deal with, no problems at all. Although apparently they'd had a lot of problems with her, but not with us girls. Well, not with me anyway.
Say they'd had a lot of problems with her...
Well, apparently in the building, in the building, they had problems with her. Because see, she used to run those witchcraft things too.
Yes.
Yeah.
On what grounds would she have been receiving Meals on Wheels, do you know?
Well, apparently she was very sick, and when we went to her, she only had like about 12 months to live.
Oh, I see. So she was probably frail.
She was very, very frail. But I think she still thought she was, you know, young. But she had beautiful paintings.
Did she?
Yeah, lovely. Because she was a painter too, they tell me.
Yeah, I think she was an artist.
Yeah. And she was looking at beautiful things there. And that.
There was one old man you also mentioned to me who gave you a gift, I think, at Christmas time.
Oh, always, yes, gave us a gift, a dear old chappie. It was always an orange tied up with a red and green ribbon. How he got it on the orange and kept it on the orange, I don't know, but he did. But that was his Christmas gift.
That was his gesture.
Everybody got an orange tied up with these two things. Now, on Christmas time, some of them, and one old chappie used to always say, you can have a wine with me now, you know. Red
Would
wine.
You?
No, I couldn't. I don't drink.
You
I
don't
used to
drink.
Say, we're not allowed to. Not allowed to. We'll get the sack if we
That's a good excuse.
Good excuses to get out. And we had another chappie. He had the biggest watch I'd ever seen. We used to call it Ben, the watch.
Like Big Ben.
Big Ben. And if we were 1 minute late, he'd be at the door and he'd have his arm out the door and this big watch on him and say, you're 1 minute late. You're 1 minute late. It's our 1 minute and make.
Yes, yeah. I suppose for some people when they've got nothing else all day, they really wait for that event to happen.
Well, the ones you had to worry about was the diabetics because they have got to eat at certain times, so therefore you've got to try and get there as you know on time a little bit before to give them the diabetics.
So better to be a little bit early than a bit late.
Yeah.
Did you ever have any problems on that score?
Oh yes, in some cases you get held up. Like you'd go somewhere and the dear old lady or dear old man would want something done, you know, a little thing done. Mightn't look much, but minutes ticked away.
Like changing a light globe
or
something like that.
Something like that or sponging a table or with little things, little, you know. And it was only there to keep you there to have a yarn, that was all.
A bit of company.
Yeah.
Now, your work with Meals on Wheels is only one part of the volunteer work you've done.
Yeah.
One of the reasons we're sitting here in the War Memorial, in one of the back rooms that people probably don't know exist, is because you're still associated with the RSL Women's Auxiliary.
Yes.
And what's your title at the moment?
My title at the moment is Acting State President of New South Wales.
Which I imagine is quite a big job.
Well, especially at the present moment because all our affiliation fees are coming in and we're getting ready for a Congress in May where there will be a new elections to see who gets the job.
Mm. And you've been actively involved with this organisation?
For 39 years.
And you've done lots of other volunteer work.
Yes.
Can you tell me a bit about that?
Well, WINGAP, the disabled children, I've worked for them for many, many, many years. And I taught the deaf and dumb sewing and dressmaking.
Did you do that in your home?
I went over to Parramatta to done it over there.
Mm.
And had the privilege to go to a few of their weddings, which was lovely. But the most important one was two of the girls. They started their own business over at Hurstville.
Oh, is that right?
And they done extremely well. Yeah, they've done extremely well. So they keep in touch with you know.
It's very rewarding, isn't it?
Very rewarding. Mm. But that was really, you know, one of the things. I've also volunteered to be what they call a house mother to the Aborigines that was sick. They used to bring to Sydney. I've done that for 10 years to my own home. And they came from out the back of Mount Isa. But when they came down, we had to take them to St Vincent's Hospital. Of course, I took them through the Catholic Aborigine missions. And they had treated them out there. And I had one little girl, which I said, Leanne. And
she meant
had
a great
warts.
Deal to you.
Yes. She was very close. We became very close. And she was lovely, you know. She had these warts everywhere over her. I used to have to paint each wart of the night time. She'd stand on the table and whistle and dance. But if she wanted something, she'd do the bird dance or the kangaroo dance or something.
She'd entertain us.
But unfortunately, she passed away in Brisbane. But my husband flew me to Brisbane to see her before she, because we would have liked to have adopted her.
Yes, you mentioned that. It became a very personal relationship.
And then we had, after my husband died, the Chernobyl, I had two Chernobyl girls for 3 days, which was lovely.
Why were they here?
Because they were where that reactor blew up in Russia, and they were affected, so they brought them out to Australia and gave them, they brought them out in two lots, brought them out and gave them about fortnight to 3 weeks. It was to help them because some of them were in shock.
So it was for treatment or a holiday?
No, just for a holiday and to see Australia. And that was interesting. We got over the language, which was only one thing I was worried about, but they learnt the cakes were in what tin and what was
it? Children are very quick to learn to suit their own interests.
But I really enjoyed their company, I really enjoyed things, and they could speak a little bit of English, but it was very, very hard. But that was really, really lovely.
How did you come to be the sort of person who did all this volunteer work? I mean, there are plenty of people who don't do anything like that. What was your own background, your family background?
Well, we lived in the country. We lived down in the Stowe country, because Dad was police, and the Rawtons' grandfather was police. And down there, I don't know, we come home from school, Mum would say, yeah, go across the paddock, Mrs. So-and-so is sick. We never knew what was in it.
But we were taught, we
were always told you must help people, you must help people. And the last thing my grandmother said to me, her and I were very close, before she died, she said to me, you're put on her earth to help people.
That's a very nice thing to say, isn't it? And lovely for a grandmother to see that in you.
Yeah.
So obviously the Meals on Wheels people around Sydney have been big beneficiaries of that inheritance.
So I just like helping people. I get a lot of fun, and I've been a mentally ill visitor down to Rozelle Hospital for the last 39 years.
Oh, have you? Oh, that's very...
With RSL.
And so what do you do in that work?
Well, we go down there and they give us those wards. We ring up and we take afternoon tea, homemade afternoon tea. And at Christmas time, it's only in the last 12 months, at Christmas we used to go down and cook them a Christmas luncheon. Actually in the hospital. In the Kane Centre, which belongs to Veteran Affairs, it's got a beautiful kitchen in it. But they've now closed it down because Rozelle's going to be closed. There's only 3 wards left down there. Now they're going over to Concord as soon as that's finished being built. So that was very rewarding to see. And we still see some of the older ones, Fred Dancing Feet, we always call him, because as he sees you, he wants to dance.
Oh, does he? So he's still a patient.
He's still a patient. Mm. He was a prisoner of war under the Japs, and he's been knocked about a bit. But he's been in there, I think somebody told me the other day, 38 years or something. He's been in a long time. And that.
And I think also, in spite of doing all of this and having had your own career and your own business, you also looked after a very sick husband for a number of years.
I did, for 18 years.
And he had a lot of things resulting from the war.
War causes. He had 7 war causes. I nursed him right up till the last 18 months, and the doctors took him and said no, he had to go into a nursing home. I couldn't nurse him. Well, it got, actually was getting beyond me. But before I wouldn't, I was proud, I suppose.
Well, and trying to do the best by him, I suppose.
No, he was very, very ill. Very young to be ill. He went to the war when he was 14 and a half. So very young man.
A baby. Now, are there other things you'd like to talk about Meals on Wheels? It's a long, long time you've done it, and I suppose, we've touched on the surface of the things you've done. Just wondering if there are other points you'd like to make about the way things may have changed, the different kind of services, maybe different approaches to diets and food over the time?
Well, I think now they only deliver them a couple of times a week because some of them put it in the chill froze, isn't it? Well, they were talking about that for quite a number of years and they tried to work it out. And I can't think of his name. He was from the council and he went out on the runs with us, different ones, because they were thinking about putting a little oven in from the woman up. But some of the majority of places didn't have room to put one in.
You mean like a little microwave?
Like a little, yeah. And then they, what else did they?
Because the issue about keeping the food hot was, it was a logistical problem, but there were also health issues and so on.
Yeah, that's right. And see, some of them, devils I used to call them, and I'd tell them to their face. You'd open their fridge, they'd say, I'll put it in the fridge, I'll have it later. And here's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday's food in the fridge. And then when they were talking about this chill, that's when they said, well, how are we going to heat it up?
Mm.
Which, as I said, some of the places couldn't do. So
a big change. I mean, they do have some meals are delivered chilled.
Yeah.
But obviously to people who are in a position to reheat.
Yeah. And then, of course, they had to move from Raybus Centre, they had to move the kitchen down to Alexandria, I think they call it, down there, you know. But the South Sydney Council was very good to their volunteers because once a year they used to put on an afternoon tea and they were thanked and we'd have a little meeting of what was going on, and the girls used to appreciate that.
Mm.
And they'd give them a little gift of a pen or a pad or some little thing.
A token to show.
A token of thank you, which was lovely.
Mm.
And we had one woman, she was from the beginning, Jess Conley, and she had to retire because she couldn't walk anymore. And the council gave her a lovely set of glasses and a big bunch of flowers and, you know, really made her a queen, as we called her, because she was a queen to us. She was more like a mother to us than what we... But that was nice. And we all appreciated the council doing that. But then, because you get the other side, the girls, you know, wasn't enough, but you...
Some of them felt they weren't being thanked enough.
Yeah, and that. So, to me, it was enough thank you just to see the faces of the people receiving our meals.
Mm.
They see their smiles and work their personality out and things, you know.
You must have been to a lot of funerals, I suppose.
Yes, that's because I got too close to them.
Mm.
And... they'd let us know, you know, that they died. Or you'd see it in the paper. And Melda was great. She used to read the paper, I think, every morning, the back page first. And she'd ring me up and she'd say, oh, Mrs. So-and-so, you know, Tom, do you think we ought to go? And I'm, oh, okay. So we'd go, you know. And the families really appreciated it, you know. And they always got a nice card from the council, from South Sydney Council, signed by the mayor. And that was nice, you know. All those little things are very, very good. Well, just shows you appreciate it, you know.
Mm. And did you develop friendships yourself out of relationships with people that you delivered with drivers and runners and so on?
Yes, I did.
I mean, you would have known a lot of the people, particularly when you were doing the work with the RSL auxiliaries. Yeah. You'd have known a lot of the women anyway,
yes,
I suppose.
Yes, well, Melda was my... when I went to RSL, she was the first driver, and we got very close until she became a chronic diabetic, and then even when she gave it up, and she went up to Henry Kendall, to retirement village that was. I still used to go up once a month or she'd come into Gosford and meet me, and we'd go and have a cup of coffee, and her husband would bring her in. Her husband was mine.
Mm.
And that her and The last driver I had was Arthur. And he was very good. He was a good man, good too. But now he's got Alzheimer's and he's in a nursing home. He just stares at the... But he was an ex-serviceman. He had hearing aids in both ears and I can't stand it. And he'd turn them off and we'd be his ears, you know. The thing. But I've only had... was Imelda, Arthur, and then Stan. Stan, he took over when Arthur got sick. He'd just retired from work. And he was a neighbour up the street, and I happened to say, oh, well, now you can do Mills on
Woods. You nailed him.
So he said, oh, well, I'll drive when Arthur can't drive. So he done with me too, and that.
So you're not doing Meals on Wheels anymore because you've got a few health problems.
That's right.
But you haven't retired entirely, have you?
No, no. I haven't retired from I haven't retired. Only from that, and that I would have liked to have still gone on for another few years.
Was that because it just required more physical exertion?
Yes, yeah, well, in some cases you haven't got lifts, so you've got to climb up a lot of stairs and that. And I should have woke up because I found I could go up so many stairs and I had to sit on the stairs, but I wasn't going to give in, you know.
Nobody wants
so
to.
So finally, I was told I had to, and that. And the council gave me, I've got a lovely certificate, and they gave me flowers, and they gave me a crest from the council.
Hello.
Very nice.
What, like a framed crest or like a plaque?
This was like a little plaque
from
the council. But I have got a framed certificate with over 45 years' service on it.
Very nice.
Yeah, so, you know, I've got my own. Funny. I go as long as I can with everything, you know. I'm not young, so I hit 80 this year, so.
That's a big one. Are there any other things you'd like to add?
No, I don't think so. I think I've got through everything. I wrote myself a few notes. That's all of the things. I thought of, you know, Rosalind.
Yeah, that was a great story.
Yeah. And there was other ones, you know, had a lot of other things, and things you've seen in the streets up at the cross. And,
yes.
You know.
Yes. I imagine you.
I just thought of this. Imelda and I were in, I think it was Maclay Street, or there, somewhere. It was near the Alamein Fountain, and it was a terrible hot day. And she said, look, I'll do this side and you do that side. So I ran in and done mine. When I came out, she hadn't come back. So there was a little tree there, so I stood under the tree and I wasn't looking, and this woman come up and dunked me in the shoulder, and she said, move on, this is my beat.
And you said, well, you can have it.
Yes, my word, I did. I moved on, I stood in the sun.
Yeah, it's a bit of a different world in King's Cross, as your parents well knew.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. They were all the places where I was told not to go.
Well, that's a very nice story to end on. Thank you very much, Thelma.